And so I want to see if I am host here. So we're lucky to have David Beck visiting here today. So there's a very interesting alternative to the traditional cross entropy, loss way of looking at training that that he's been proposing that seems to lead to some disentanglement. I think it's a very interesting topic. So David, is your second year student, is that right?
That's right. Yeah.
And you're actually, are you with Max Tegmark?
Yeah, that's
And does
right.
that mean that you're in the physics department?
No, actually, I'm in the ECS
You're in
department.
the
Yeah,
ECS.
and then like I looked for Pfizer after I got admitted. So
Oh, I see. I see. But you're ECS at MIT. And so well th so thanks for coming. So welcome, David.
Thanks for the introduction. I'm David Beck from Max Tegmark's group. I'm a second year PhD student, and today I'd like to talk about harmonic loss for interpretability. Yeah, so if we like zoom out a little bit and we think about what we do in mechanistic interpretability, there are several things we do. So for instance, we do like circuit analysis. We try to find a localized circuit that does things like addition or some numerical operations or some in-context learning, knowledge extraction, all the other things. But oftentimes, like, it is very challenging to find a localized circuit that is really devoted to a specific task because large language model is like a huge kind of object that is able to do like a whole bunch of things. And it's really, really hard to just isolate a circuit that is just devoted to a single thing. But we also do other things like representation analysis. So we take the residual stream representations, we apply PCA, and try to look at the top few principal components and try to like manually interpret what they actually mean. Or more like systematically, we also try train sparse autoencoder and representations to kind of like look at the features, what features are there, what features are like unique to reasoning models or vision language models, and try to understand like how different models evolve, et cetera. But these representation analysis methods also suffer from a lot of limitations. So for instance, oftentimes when we do like PCA on representations, there is like a huge amount of unexplained variance that remains, which means that there is like a pretty much like non-trivial fraction of the representation that we don't actually understand. And the same thing goes for a sparse autoencoder. There is like non-trivial amount of like reconstruction loss that we are not able to fill in under this like framework of like linear representation hypothesis and linearly encoding representation and decoding it back. So like mechanistic interpretability, or maybe more specifically, like post-hoc interpretability is pretty challenging. And what we want to do, ideally, what we want to do is we want to build a model that is interpretable by design. And then we can actually think about like how can we build models that are interpretable by design? And what are the things that kind of like blocking us to make models that are interpretable by design? So I think there may be multiple reasons here. Maybe there is some kind of like inherent trade-off between like model performance and interpretability. I'm not sure about that. But I think one like important reason is that we don't actually have a good metric for quantifying interpretability. What I mean by this is we don't have a good measure that can measure like how interpretable a model is. So for instance, if we had some kind of metric that can like take like for instance a model as an input and then like output like how interpretable a model is, then we can just do some kind of like simple gradient descent or backpropagation to like train a model to be just more interpretable. However, to the best of my knowledge, like there's no such kind of metric. So there are many benchmarks for measuring like no normal models' performances, like MMLU or ImageNet, Glue, and many other benchmarks. But we don't have a suitable benchmark or metric to measure the interpretability. I think the recent SAE benchmark from Google DeepMind is kind of a work in this direction. But this work only applies to sparse autoencoder, and it cannot like measure the quality of like a general interpretability tool. So the question I want to pose here is, how can we actually define a global metric to evaluate the quality of an interpretability tool? And yeah, I really want to like hear like everyone's opinion on this like after the talk as well.
There is like a very recent paper, this mechanistic interpretability bench.
Oh yeah. I think
But I have not really read it yet, so.
yeah. Maybe that would be very relevant. Yeah. Yeah, so the message here is that quantifying interpretability is challenging, and like we kind of wanted to think about like what would be the best way to quantify interpretability. And like one way I like to think of intelligence is like intelligence equals compression. So when we try to understand very complicated or complicated concepts, we usually decompose them into like multiple smaller parts, and then we understand those smaller parts first, and then kind of combine all of them together to like get a better understanding of an otherwise very complicated concept. So in this way, I think like intelligence can be kind of translated to compression. And for instance, like decomposing a problem into like four subproblems is probably much better than decomposing it to 100 problems, because like it'd be probably complicated to like, you know, combine all the answers from 100 different problems into like understanding a larger one. So in mathematical terms, this means that representations have relatively low dimensional structures. And then, or equivalently, if we apply like principal component analysis on like residual stream representations, then top few principal components dominate, or yeah. So like we'll get like 100% coverage of explained variance within like top 5 or 10 components. So, and then another thing we want to think about is, okay, intelligence is compression, then what is like the good unit of compression? So basically, going back to the example I gave, if we want to like decompose the big concept into four different problems, then what are those four problems? What are those like unit things in large language models? And we actually think that those unit of compressions are parallelograms. So this is a figure from the group's function vector paper, which I like it a lot. So basically, in order for large language models to generalize, we believe that they should be able to have some clever representation, and they should be able to compress like the huge amount of web text into some clever way. And we think those units are actually parallelograms. So this can be either like the form of function vector, where there is like a direction for English to French, English to Spanish, or some country to capital. But this could also be a form of more like traditional word embedding style parallelograms, where we have like a gender direction, and also have a royalty direction, and then man, woman, and king, queen kind of forms like a parallelogram. So, yeah. So we think intelligence kind of translates to compression, and those units of compression is probably parallelograms. Then we actually want to think about how can we make large language models learn better parallelograms. So motivated by this, we actually propose this new loss function called harmonic loss. So here we have like a comparison between the harmonic loss and the traditional cross entropy loss. So the major changes we make here is we basically modify how the unembedding layer computes the computation. So in order to compute the logit, instead of computing a dot product between the unembedding layer weights and the final layer representation, we instead compute L2 distance between unembedding layer weights and the final layer representations. And in order to obtain the probability, instead of taking the weighted sum of the exponent of the logit, we take the weighted sum of these harmonic function of the logits, which is like 1 over d to the power of some number. So this harmonic loss, like by design, has like multiple benefits. So if we define a logit as the L2 distance between unembedding layer and representation, by construction, all the unembedding layer weights become interpretable. Like each row of the unembedding layer weight simply becomes like the class center. And also, we have a new very good property, which is this our harmonic loss is scale invariant, that means that, so in cross entropy loss, you can increase the logit by simply like having like a larger magnitude norm of the weights. But that pro yeah.
Can I stop you a little bit?
yeah
Yeah.
yeah
So okay. So this is a little bit of a silly question.
yeah okay
I understand the formula for harmonic mean,
okay
but what does harmonic mean actually mean? I
uh
mean, if it's a mean of a bunch of points, I know that it is something somewhere in the center,
Yeah,
right?
yeah.
But if I plot harmonic mean, what will this mean?
Okay,
Do you know?
so harmonic can mean multiple things here,
Yeah.
but basically the name harmonic here comes from like taking 1/D in the logic.
Yeah.
So like 1/
That part I understand. What does it physically mean, and why you did? You said something like, if we take harmonic mean and use this L2 distance between those things, then by design it will become interpretable. I'm just having trouble to make this connection. Does that make sense?
Oh, okay. So one thing I have to probably clarify is that here in cross entropy, like larger, higher logic is better. But here, like lower logic is better, technically, because we're taking the inverse of the logic and then taking the power of n. So when we have like a perfectly trained model, then we'll have like wi equals x for x that belongs to class I.
That is kind of like same for cross entropy as well, because when the vectors are same, you get one.
But the thing is, like cross entropy laws cannot get like a perfect class mean, because if you just simply like increase the logic, increase the weight norm,
It's the norm.
increase the weight norm, you can simply like increase the
Can gain
logic
it.
further. So there's this kind of like imperfection that kind of prevents them to like make the like point place wi into like a perfect position.
My another thing that I want to say is that before you apply this cross entropy laws, there is a model norm. There is a model norm, right? Which
Layer
kind
norm.
there's a yeah layer norm, which kind of like makes sure that you can't game that. You can increase that by gaming the magnitude of the things, right? So,
Yeah, I think that does help definitely, but
Okay, anyways, it has some things, but how does this harmonic mean design encourage interpretability?
So harmonic loss encourages interpretability a bit because it like enables like wi equals exactly x when it's when it's like perfectly trained. But here, like, so in cross entropy laws, wi doesn't necessarily is the class mean. It's like a so wi will be the representation vector of like average representation vector of the entities that belong to class I. Because that will like maximize the dot product, right? So like when wi and x point to the same direction, the logic will be maximized,
I
right?
should probably let you
Oh,
continue.
okay,
We can have this discussion later.
sure.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, okay. So harmonic loss has this like scale invariance which prevents like the weight norm from diverging, and this can have like multiple good properties. Has like better con a faster convergence and also like better generalization bound and all the other things.
Oh, also another thing. Sorry
No
for
problem.
keeping to
No
interrupt
problem,
you.
yeah.
So you said that this harmonic loss was inspired by so two questions. First, you said that you think that intelligence is the manifestation of having this kind of parallelograms, how we compose different concepts. And then you said that this design is kind of inspired by those parallelogram design. Are you about to make that connection, or did you already make that
I
connection?
think I didn't make the ex connection explicitly, but so why harmonic loss encourages like learning more lower dimensional compressed representations? I think the key point is that like L2 norm as a distance metric is much more favorable to like learning lower dimensional like compressed representation as opposed to like dot product, because like so L2 distance norm is like kind of native to like Euclidean plane, like some lower dimensional thing. But cross product, like by design, I think it kind of like makes the points diverge to like a mul like a much higher dimensional space. And then like we observed that experimentally and that's cool. So we claim that harmonic loss has three major advantages. First, improved interpretability, which by By interpretability, we means better compression and like learning more like compressed lower dimensional representations. Second of all, it has better data, higher data efficiency. If there's a typo here, higher data efficiency, which means that it can generalize with less data, and it also has less delayed generalization or grokking. So like there have been like a multiple papers like when we train MLP toy models to learn like modular addition, there's like a gap between the rise of train accuracy and test accuracy, and this is not favorable because I ideally want them to like kind of rise together so that like we have like a better like way of monitoring like the training process, but also like this implicitly means that like harmonic loss kind of converges faster and generalizes faster. And another thing is it doesn't lose performance like compared to CE loss. We like kind of benchmark the performance across like the toy task and then GPT-2, ImageNet, and it actually doesn't lose performance, and it's sometimes it's slightly better. So perhaps there may not be like a trade-off between interpretability and performance. Perhaps that's not like something that we cannot fix. Yeah, so I want to show you the figures that went viral on Twitter a few months ago. So on the first row, compares the standard MLP and harmonic MLP trained to learn a modular addition. So we can see the standard MLP learns a circle, but it's like a very imperfect circle. And also the explained variance explained by this first two principal components is far below 100%. Whereas for harmonic MLP, it is actually able to learn like a literally 100% perfect 2D circle, and the explained variance by the first two principal components is also 100%. And on the second row, sh compares the standard model and harmonic model trained to learn MNIST digit classification, and we visualize the weights. We can see that the standard model trained to learn MNIST, it does kind of have this like shape of a three when we visualize the weights, but it's kind of like mushy and blurry. It doesn't like completely identify the edge. Whereas for harmonic loss, like we can actually see that it is like there is like perfectly identifying all the edges of this number three, which is pretty cool. Yeah. So I want to go through like each point of the harmonic loss one by one. So first of all, harmonic loss has better compression. So we evaluate this first on like a set of toy tasks. So we have like in-context learning, modular addition, permutation composition, and some other tasks. So here I show results for in-context learning and modular addition. So in-context learning is actually like very much relevant to like in-context learning in large language models. So large language models, for instance, we give the words like we give three words, man, woman, king, and the model has to predict like queen. Or we give like France, Paris, and Italy, and then the model has to predict Rome. So here, how we design this toy task, we basically have this grid of points, and you're given 3 points on the grid, A, B, and C, and you have to find another point, D, when combined with A, B, and C, would form a parallelogram. So if the model is actually able to like perfectly digest the structure, we expect the model to develop this perfect 2D representation. So when we compare like standard MLP and harmonic MLP trained on this in-context learning task, we can actually see that standard MLP can somewhat learn some kind of lattice, but we can see that there are some distortions here and there, and it's not perfect. And the explained variance by the first two principal components is not actually 100%. It's like 90%. But when it comes to harmonic MLP, we can see that like regardless of the training random seeds, it always learn like a perfect 2D lattice with 100% experience explained variance by the first two principal components. And the same goes for modular addition. So here you're given two numbers, A and B, and you have to predict like A plus B modulo 31 or something. You can see that standard MLP learns some kind of circle, but it's not perfect, and the explained variance by the first two principal components is like 50%, 40%, far below 100%. Whereas in harmonic MLP, it can actually learn a perfect 2D circle in like most of the cases, like more than like 80% of the random seeds produces like perfect circle. And even in those cases that failed, like it's a pretty good circle, and the explained variance is still higher than standard MLP.
Sure.
Yeah.
So maybe, I mean, you probably mentioned this earlier, but like, what aspect about the harmonic loss does it lead this to have like a better compression?
Yeah, so I think So I think the key thing is that number one, by using like a L2 distance instead of like a dot product, like Euclidean like L2 distance matrix is like more native to like lower dimensional representations, which can lead to them to like learn like more compressed representation. And second thing is the scale invariance, that basically kind of bounds the weight norm of the unembedding like weight matrix, unembedding like weight values, and that actually leads to like faster convergence and like better generalization bound, because like the generalization accuracy is bounded by some weight norms, some other things.
So in your experience, like when will be like when would you like switch like when would cross entropy loss be better than harmonic loss? Or is it generally the
No,
conclusion
so
being like mostly it's gonna be harmonic?
yeah, so we think that harmonic loss would be better in like learning like more structured tasks like math or algorithms. When there is like more structure within the data, we think harmonic loss can encourage the model to learn more compressed structured representation. Whereas like when it comes to like some like general language or like writing a prose and stuff like that, I think like cross entropy can like better encourage some like diversity and like you have to kind of float around the high dimensional space.
Also, okay. Also, another question.
Yeah.
Since you are already in this situation,
Okay.
you must be adding some kind of bias just to make sure that you are not dividing by
Oh yeah,
zero,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Okay.
We're doing that in like code. Yeah.
Okay. And that is not learned. That is kind of like
No, it's just
something
like
just a
epsilon.
small value.
Yeah, just like epsilon, like e to the minus six. Yeah.
Wouldn't it be more accurate to say that you're not, it's not, you still have cross entropy here, you're really substituting for softmax. That's what you're doing, right?
Oh yeah.
So it's really softmax versus harmonic. That's what you're doing. Because in the end you're taking a log probability. Still the cross entropy of the end.
I think actually, yeah, some
It's really
people.
you're re reacting to the undesirable properties of softmax. So the other question is, what is your n?
Oh yeah. So yeah, that's a good question, actually. So for our toy experiments, we just use n equals one. But like we have some like mathematical arguments in the paper that like n has to be like a square root of like the intrinsic dimensionality of the data. So for instance, like in GPT-2, like we take n to be like square root of 768, which is the embedding dimension of GPT-2.
Intrinsic dimensionality of the data.
Yeah, this is not like a mathematically precise argument, but like we can like make some argument that one is like n is square root of some intrinsic dimensionality of the data, kind of like matches the data like traditional data distribution.
But to get the intrinsic dimensionality of the data,
Yeah.
you first need to train the model and
Yeah,
then
but
do
yeah,
rank
but
analysis on the
here we just
papers.
approximate as a square root of the embedding
Of the
dimension.
dimensions. Okay.
Yeah, and also like in GPT-2, like we found that if we use n equals one, like the loss doesn't go down, the loss doesn't drop. So that actually means like the learning rate is too small, because like you have to use like a different learning rate scale for cross entropy and harmonic, because like the logits are kind of on a different scale. Yeah, and we also show that harmonic loss has better data efficiency and less grokking. So for on the top figure, we show the test accuracy as a function of train fraction. We can see that our harmonic models tend to like generalize much better with less training data. And also on the second row, we show like the number of fOX to reach test ac train accuracy like larger than 90% versus the number of epochs to reach test accuracy larger than 90%, and the points that lie very close to the y-axis here. For instance, like in model addition, we can see that standard MLP almost always grok very heavily, whereas when it comes to harmonic loss, those points like lie mostly on the diagonal line, which means that train accuracy and test accuracy kind of rise together. So this is like a more concrete example of model addition. So in standard models, they usually grok, sometimes fail to generalize, They learn some kind of circle is, but it's not perfect, and they explain variance by the first two principal components is far below 100%. And there are like multiple techniques that we actually use to circumvent this, which includes like layer norm and weight decay and some other regularization techniques. But even if we use regularization techniques, they, yes, improve, but it's still not perfect. It's still like 58%. But when it comes to harmonic loss, even if you don't use weight decay, you can learn like a perfect circle with 100% explained variance. And there are some like other like loss functions, like distance-based loss functions that were proposed back in the days. But we also do some like ablation experiments, and we believe that like both like distance-based logit metric and also like the scale invariance part where we use harmonic like function, like, but we believe like both of those components are important in actually achieving this result. So for instance, here we kind of compare contrastive loss, so like spherical loss and harmonic loss, can see that like contrastive loss can like somewhat learn a lattice, but like it doesn't generalize to transformer, whereas like harmonic loss can learn a perfect lattice with 100% explained variance for both MLP transformer, regardless of the random seeds. Yeah. And then we also experiment with like ImageNet, LLMs. And here like we do some like preliminary experiments on applying harmonic loss to GPT-2. So we train GPT-2 with both standard soft Markov entropy loss and harmonic loss. And basically we look at the representations. And because we believe that the unit of compression is probably parallelograms, we take pairs of word pairs from the group's function vector data set. So for instance, if we have like country to capital, we have France, Paris, Italy, Rome, and then we'll take the representations at any, it can be at any layer. So we take the representations from those like four words, and then we define what we call the parallelogram loss. So the parallelogram loss is defined by like France plus Paris minus Italy plus Rome. And if it is a perfect parallelogram, this loss will be zero. And then what we do is we plot like a cumulative fraction of this parallelogram loss for like all word pairs. And the orange line here is the representations from harmonic models, and the blue line is from the representations from standard models. And we can see that across like many different relations, and it is also independent of the number of principal components used.
Sorry, you are not optimizing it, right? Are you optimizing it?
What do you mean? No,
You
so
are not
we're just
optimizing
training GPT-2 for with the harmonic loss.
like normal next word prediction loss, right? And
Yeah.
you are not optimizing
No,
over L
we're
prime.
not optimizing for this loss. Yeah. So we just take the GPT-2 trained with a harmonic loss and then just use this as an evaluation.
And what is this fractions like? It's basically accuracy, right?
So fraction means so you have like a total like data set, right? And then it's like a cumulative like histogram. So for instance, like here you can see that. So for instance, antonym, like for instance, like 50% of the entire like word pairs have parallelogram loss below like five or something like that.
Sorry, what?
Oh, so here, like 50% of all the word pairs have parallelogram loss below like five or something.
So this is parallelogram loss. Okay. By some constant. Is that a constant?
Oh yeah, this is
Sigma?
a normalization constant.
Okay,
Yeah.
some constant and the highest value is one.
No. So the y-axis value like doesn't really mean anything. So one means like 100% of the data. So it covered like 100% of the data.
When you say covered, what do you mean again?
So for each like pair of four words,
Okay.
we're going to compute the parallelogram loss.
Okay.
And then we're going to sort all of the parallelogram loss.
Yes.
And then like we're going to write down like what is the cumulative count so far, beginning from like the lowest parallelogram loss.
What do you get at that? What is the I'm just having trouble
Okay.
understanding.
So, yeah. So,
Yeah.
yeah. So,
Yeah.
you have parallelogram loss, and like you'll have like many different parallelogram loss values, right?
Yes. You sort them and you add them up.
We don't directly add parallelogram loss, but we count as it's like a histogram, like below like certain parallelogram loss value, like how many word pairs are there?
So you set a threshold
Yeah.
and you ignore some of these values, and
Okay, yeah.
this is kind of like how many of your
Yeah.
samples are above those
But
or
below the
below
threshold.
those below
Yeah,
this
so the
threshold.
x-axis is actually threshold.
Okay.
Yeah.
X-axis is the threshold. Oh, okay. So in words, why is it that you want this to be shifted to the left?
Because that means like each word pairs are like a more perfect parallelogram. And if the unit of compression is parallelogram, we want them to learn like more perfect parallelogram.
Because your parallelogram geometries are closer to.
Yeah. So when loss is zero, it means perfect parallelogram, and we want like this curve to be as close as possible to like a Dirac delta function, the step function.
So which layer are you taking these implementations from?
This is from like the embedding layer representations, but we also do evaluations on like other layers too. Yeah.
If you're taking it from embedding layer, how can you do previous item or next item?
No.
Oh, previous item mean
It's
like
like two
Monday,
and one.
Tuesday.
Yeah.
Oh,
Two and one. Yeah. Yeah.
okay. So this is not
And how does it
yeah.
look at other layers when you do this? I don't have the results right now, but in general, like the behavior is very similar to this. But generally, in some layers, like harmonic loss has like more high quality parallelograms, and sometimes also like a little bit more worse here, which will look like just draw. And in some layers, we found something this kind of behavior. Yeah. So it has like more perfect parallelograms, but also like slightly more worse parallelograms. But general behavior is that harmonic loss tends to have more perfect parallelograms. Yeah. Yeah, so this is like the end of the main part of the talk. We still think there are like many things that we still have to study. Like for instance, like how can we scale models with harmonic loss? For instance, how can we train like 8 billion parameter size models with harmonic loss? Will it get like even better interpretability, or will it reach some plateau at some point? But at a more high level, I think there are some other like interesting takeaways and questions that we all can think about. So for instance, like, are there better ways to quantify interpretability? So here we kind of quantify interpretability as compression, but maybe there may be some better ways to quantify it, and we can optimize for the signal. Another thing is we can perhaps dive deeper into weight space. So a lot of the SAE works, it's kind of like look at the representations and you train like a sparse solid encoder to learn those features. But for instance, like from like a recent work attribution-based parameter decomposition for our Apollo research, they train an SAE on weights. And in our work, it is also kind of like looking at the weight space because we kind of modify the weight space of the unembedding layer to be like precisely become like the center of each class. So perhaps if we look more into weight space, like we can learn more things and we can find some more interesting interpretability techniques. And also, how do we build scalable models that are interpretable by design? Or Can we build models that are safe by design by enforcing some geometric constraints on weights and/or representations? Because I think the core intuition for designing harmonic loss is that by using like L2 distance, like you kind of encourage like lower dimensional representations. So if you like think more about the geometry of weights or representations, we can learn a lot some more interesting things or come up with some interesting interpretability techniques. For more details about the paper, you can look at the paper on archive. Yeah. That's the end of my presentation. Thank you very much for listening.
So you have trained some language models with this class.
Yeah.
So have you like you have of course seen like how does this language models perform like qualitatively? Like is it
Like in
better?
terms of benchmarks.
Not in jumbo in terms of benchmarks,
Oh.
like what's the vibe of them? They still generate kind of like legible text.
Yeah, they do generate legible text. I feel it's like probably slightly better than the standard
Oh,
model,
better than the standard model, okay.
but it's not significantly better, but at least not worse.
Because like what is the like biggest model you have trained with this loss?
Oh, this is just GPT-2 is the max, actually. Yeah.
Yes. So GPT-2 has different versions like Excel,
Oh, like the smallest
the
one.
smallest
Yeah,
one.
yeah.
So 762
It's like
million.
yeah, 100. Yeah, I think it's 160 million. So I
Oh,
hope I'm
okay.
correct.
So, okay. So this is
Yeah.
GPT-2 small.
Yeah, GPT
Okay.
too small. Yeah,
Yeah.
GPT too small.
Okay.
So I have some suggestions. So is this still going through peer review or how is this?
Oh, this is still going through peer review. Yeah.
That's great. So I have some suggestions. So I wonder about. So I think you're framing putting yourself up against cross-entropy loss will not endear you to readers. I think that the thing to pick on is softmax.
Okay. Yeah.
I think that cross-entropy and KL loss, KL divergence and these sort of statistical measures, very principled. They have a lot of fans, and there's a deep well of support.
Yeah.
You tell people that they shouldn't be looking at KL divergence anymore. And that you're gonna have a lot of stuff to defend. But then softmax is not very principled. And actually you have you're preserving cross entropy, you're preserving the KL nature of what's going on. So instead of picking on cross entropy, I would pick on softmax.
That's good.
And so the other so but then there's a nice analogy to this. So there's you're familiar with the Glorot work from 2010 from Benjil's lab.
Not 100% sure,
So
but
but you've heard of Xavier initialization.
which initialization?
Xavier
Oh,
initialization. Yeah. So Xavier Glorot wrote several papers that I would recommend taking a look at and comparing to your approach and like the way that Xavier wrote his papers. He picks on, it was very popular, the sigmoid nonlinearity at the time. He basically convinces everybody that the reason that deep learning is stuck is because everybody's using the sigmoid nonlinearity. And I think that the consensus is that he was right back in the day. And so, if you're making the argument that we're doing things wrong because everybody's using the stupid softmax for no good reason, then I think that you have a very, very similar argument to him, maybe for different reasons. But I would recommend going back and seeing how he made the argument.
Sounds good.
And you might consider doing similar things. I think that he had a lot of detailed look at internal training dynamics and stuff in some of the things in great detail. And so I think that he ended up having a lot of impact in his work. And so I think that the challenge of your work is that if the performance of what you have is sort of about the same, so I've got some other questions, right? Then it's going to be very hard to have any impact because people aren't familiar with your stuff and it's costly to verify that it works well. So, but you can kind of see like what he ended up doing to have impact. That makes sense? Okay, cool. So then the other question I have for you is like, so I think it's kind of interesting the impact you'll have on sort of the final layer embedding. you know, because it's the end-to-end loss from the whole network. I do feel like there's something that we should be doing differently in the interior layers to have this sort of effect, or right? Because I kind of feel like one of the things that we're finding is that, you know, the final layer is fine, but a lot of the rich interpretability, you know, stories or things that we have to understand are, you know, really in the middle layers of the network. Yeah, when and your loss is very far away from those middle layers.
Yeah, so I think like by modifying on embedding layer, like it kind of like propagates into some middle layer representation, but I think there should be something we should be able to do for the middle layer representations, but I don't think of anything like immediately.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's reasonable.
Yeah.
You know, I think that if you had some proposal there that worked in the middle layers. Then I feel like, oh yeah, you feel like having it'd be like Xavier Glorot. You might be able to redefine a lot of things. Make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. I think those are my main two questions.
I guess like if you want to do something at the like middle layer, like it's probably something about like changing the fundamental structure of transformers, but or I don't know,
right?
Yeah,
but I mean, there's a lot of weird stuff we do in the
yeah,
layers.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
uh,
yeah, yeah.
You know, we have all these layer norms that we keep on using. We
yeah,
we have all these, you know,
yeah,
nonlinearities that we've chosen. You know, got all sorts of like weird arbitrary stuff that we do for no good reason. So if you come out swinging and say, this arbitrary thing, nobody's questioned, but I'm going to question it. I think that.
It's like the recent like muon optimizer work that kind of.
I guess so, but it's a different kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But you're going after a different thing.
Yeah.
Don't be envious of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. So your work has, you know, so the other disadvantage or the disadvantage that you have is because you're going after a fundamental, you know, machine learning loss, then my prediction is that, you know, in review, people will hold you to a very, very high bar of empirical evidence, right? They'll be like, yeah, you only tested here, you only tested there. I'm not sure what your comments are going to be like, right? They'll probably want a lot more. It's probably one of the questions that you feel
So it's actually like under ICML review right now. I think actually like less reviewers challenge like the fact that we didn't do experiments on even larger models, but a lot of the reviewers questioned like if the claim is not performance but interpretability, and if you don't have a good metric for interpretability, then how do you know that this is like objectively better? That's the concern.
So on that note, there's been attempts to quantify interpretability. So my old like network dissection work is like an attempt to do this. Are you familiar with that work?
I think I should take a look.
Yeah, you can take a look.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's actually, I think the title of the paper is actually called Quantifying Interpretability, you know, something or other. And it's an old work from 2017. And the idea is, you know, you train your model to do one thing, and then you have a ground truth of human understandable concepts, like a large vocabulary of human understandable concepts. And then you look for alignment with that large vocabulary of, you know, implicit concepts that weren't mentioned in your training data. And so it's just a brute force way of accounting. You could report things on that.
I guess ideally, like we have like a bunch of different metrics, just as we have like different benchmarks for measuring performance, we have like a bunch of different metrics, and then we can show that this interpretability method is like achieved top in like all metrics, but we don't have that much metrics.
Cool. Sure.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. No, the interpretability metrics are very important. And then, so then the other, so like a really solid interpretability thing would take a few metrics, and then also would do like a human evaluation, because like in the end,
that's right. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So your parallelogram metric, which you sort of reported here,
yeah,
right, is that sort of your main compelling evidence?
Yeah, it is. It is.
I see.
Yeah.
Could you explain a little about what UK meant? I think it was a slide back.
EK?
Yeah.
Oh, so this can be like any representations from the model. So it can be like layer one residual stream representations, but here this plot is using like the embedding representation. Yeah.
So this is embedding, not that an embedding, right?
No, this is embedding. Okay. Yeah.
But EK, what EK means here is the embedding of every vocabulary word. So that the sum is, so that's really an average over all the vocabulary.
Oh, like
is that right?
One.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Does that answer your question?
Okay.
Yeah.
So basically when we construct the parallelogram, how far off were we relative to like the average just concept in here or average embedded?
The root mean squared.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you're normalizing to the root mean squared embedding size. How does this compare? So there was this argument made by, was it Andy Arditi, about the entropy, was it an entropy neuron or the entropy, do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right, was it entropy token? Anyway, there was, or the entropy attention head or something like that. I'm not sure which abstraction this was.
Yeah, I remember something about entropy neuron, yeah.
Yeah, so there's this basic issue, which is you've often got dimensions in these large representations where they have a scaling effect, where when the dimension rises, then it has the effect of changing the temperature, you know, having an effect on softmax and causing it to be more or less confident. And so the network can, like, you know, pick a neuron or something like that, and then use it to modulate its confidence. And so there is there's a paper, I think, from Arditi that I think the argument was made that this is what the networks are doing.
Mm-hmm.
So now when you go to this like Euclidean loss,
yeah,
you don't have softmax anymore.
Yeah.
And so you no longer have the ability to have like an entropy neuron or something like that. So I guess you won't get this question from ICML. This is very interpretability inside baseball question, right? But like do you lose like the entropy neuron? Do you need one? Is there a problem for having lost it? Right? Do you also, if you lose the entropy neuron, does that mean that your model has worse calibration? Right? So like when the model thinks that it's certain or when the model thinks it's uncertain, is it reflective of its actual accuracy or not, or you know, is it better or worse? That kind of, because it seems like to me, it seems like that's sort of the, like if you think conceptually of what softmax is doing, is this, you know, by removing softmax,
yeah,
you're potentially removing the ability to do that. That makes sense as a question.
So like, is it better or worse to have entropy neuron?
Right. And you know, maybe it makes no difference. Maybe your models are just as well calibrated as before.
Yeah.
But I think calibration is an interesting thing to test.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's a good idea. Yeah, interesting thing.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm sure you didn't get this paper.
It's not an Arditi paper. Who was it?
Alexander Stoffolo.
Oh, okay.
It's from Neil's group.
Oh, it's a different Neil group paper.
Yeah.
All right. I've mixed it up with a different thing. So that's not worth the section.
I also wanted to talk with you about, you said something intelligence equal to compression.
Yeah.
And you said that, okay, dividing up tasks into four subtasks compared to 100 subtasks
Yeah.
is better.
Yeah.
I
It's
mean,
not a
I can
strict analogy.
I mean, of course.
Yeah,
Yeah,
yeah.
of course.
Yeah,
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 of course.
yeah.
But yeah, okay. I can also make this argument, this intelligence about composing different stuff. The
Like, if you
greater
can
this number
compose the
of
more,
differences,
yeah.
the more better. And also, like, if these 100 subtasks are more generalizable, more usable for other solving other tasks,
Yeah,
maybe
maybe.
you are supposed to
Yeah.
break down in more subtasks.
Yeah. I
Okay.
agree with you. The interpretability is not the same as compression.
He
It's
said
not,
that
I also had,
intelligence equal to
oh,
compression.
is you said intelligence or
Yeah, I
intelligence?
said
Yeah.
intelligence
Okay.
is compression.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, maybe generalization. But you know, it's more like there's an arrow,
Yeah.
right?
Yeah.
It's like compression does not lead to intelligence. Maybe intelligence leads to compression. Like there's this arrow. So this is the danger.
Yeah.
If you say equals, then
Yeah.
yeah.
I guess there is like a classic saying that like if you understood something perfectly, then you should be able to explain it to like kindergarten people. Be able to explain it very easily. It's similar with the argument I was making. Yeah.
Also, I kind of like got lost in the connection. So you made the okay, intelligence equal to compression, gave this analogy, and then you jumped to parallelogram.
Yeah.
It was a little bit lost there. Maybe yeah, that's what I wanted to
Yes,
talk
yeah.
to, yeah,
So
during your presentation.
the connection I was trying to make
Yeah.
is like we decompose the bigger task into smaller tasks, and like each of those units is like about like have like developing a better understanding of parallelograms. And like when we combine like
Why parallelograms? Why not something else? Like, I know that I like
Yeah.
we like parallelograms because it came from kind of like
Yeah,
our lab, but I mean it's a valid question, right? Why not
it is a valid
something
question.
else?
Yeah. I don't have a very good answer for that actually, but I think the best way to compress like a huge text is probably like you have like different individual text, like individual like feature directions, just like an SAE, and then like you kind of compose them. So in that sense, like it's probably some parallelogram or
Yeah.
hyperdimensional cube.
And probably parallelograms is the simplest setting to test how two things compose. Right?
Yeah, we can test like cube and like four dimensionals, but yeah, that's
So
what we can.
I like this question. It's like if you argue that the parallelogram geometry is better, then you also would expect that you might be able to detect better performance of a certain type of generalization, right? So the
Yeah.
parallelogram thing is about
Yeah.
compositional generalization.
That's right. Yeah.
And so I feel like, you know, your work would be really compelling if you showed, even in toy data or something like that, the compositional generalization worked better end to end, not just geometrically, but actually just like, you know, in some sort of benchmark test, you know, traditional machine learning test. I think
Yeah.
that would be like a tour de
Nice.
force if
Nice.
you showed that you've got this loss,
Nice. Yeah.
that you can show through an interpretability method that you know why it's getting better geometrically, and then end to end, it actually exhibits some better compositional generalization. Then I feel like you'd be a shoo-in to ICML.
Like in terms of like
Yes.
generalization performance, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
But it doesn't necessarily need to be classic, you know, broad generalization performance of just randomly selected examples. You could curate it and say our hypothesis is specific to a certain type of generalization, like compositional
Makes sense.
generalization, and then you could target your test to, you know, exactly look for that, and then make the argument that that's because there's a lot of theoreticians who are basically arguing that the power of a lot of these large models comes from compositional generalization. So you can say, well, let's make that better.
Yeah, sounds good.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I'm gonna turn off the recording and thank David here. So, but thanks very much, David, for the presentation. It's great. Very interesting. A very interesting investigation you're doing here.